Love Is by Vicky. This story takes place at the end of episode 5-4, The End. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. 2 Corinthians 13, 4 and 7. Dean is fretting about the car. I can't leave her behind, he says, completely serious, as if the Impala is his wife and not his vehicle. Castiel knows Dean is fond of his car, even if he cannot fully grasp such abiding love for an inanimate object. He understands its protective value, and he knows Dean's history, how he rebuilt the car from a complete wreckage, how he grew up in the car, and even that he convinced his father to purchase the car. But even so, there is something there, a desperation, perhaps, that Castiel does not expect. Why? He asks, because he doesn't understand. Dean, distracted, turns to look at Castiel. "'Cause she's my baby,' he says, as if that explains everything. "'Besides, I gotta go pick up Sam.' "'The separate vacations are over, it seems. "'Castiel does not know what Zachariah did to Dean, "'but he is different than he was 308 minutes ago, "'when he insisted on sleep and told Castiel to wait. "'There is a new fear in his eyes, "'a regret in his grip upon Castiel's shoulder, "'a determination in his shoulders,' and a weariness in his voice. He wants back the brother he pushed away. He wants Castiel as he is. Castiel does not know how else he would be. He wants his car. Dean sits heavily on the bed of the motel room Castiel took him to, and he scrubs his hand over his face. I feel like shit, he says. It would be wisest for Dean to acquire a new vehicle. Once he had applied the same protections as those on the Impala, it would be the same to Castiel's eyes. But Dean would not see it that way, and in this moment, at such a low ebb, Castiel would not deny him some small comfort. I will retrieve the Impala, Castiel promises. He takes flight before Dean can uncover his face with his palm. Heartbeats. Castiel is familiar with time as a flow now, unable to step out of it at will. His vessel's body segmenting moments. It is a heartbeat of time to fly to the Impala. It would be a heartbeat to return to Dean. He reaches for the roof of the car and grips it tight. A hand fists in his vessel's hair. Castiel is not sure how to fragment time down further than heartbeats, but it is less than one in which Castiel releases the Impala, reaches for his sword, and is flung through two states and headlong into a tree. Light explodes behind his eyelids, and he knows his vessel has fractured his skull, although not seriously. He crumbles to the ground, groping for his weapon, but he dropped it when he was flung here. His ears are ringing, and it is difficult, so difficult, to push himself beyond Jimmy Novak's skin. Faintly he hears wings, and stirred leaves brush against his face. He flees blind, throwing himself headlong through space, and lands in the plains of Oklahoma, in waist-high wheat. Castiel staggers and somersaults to a stop. The vessel's damage is not his own, but it certainly feels like it. Castiel grits his teeth and slits his eyes open, but he cannot see much, and the one that ambushed him will follow soon. He rolls onto his stomach and takes a precious moment to heal the damage done to Jimmy's body. A sword. No, Castiel's sword. Slams down, piercing through Castiel's left hand and pinning him to the earth. Castiel screams. His true voice beats his own vessel's ears. There is an urge, fleeting, to flee his vessel, but the weapon has pinned him as surely as the body he is wearing, and he would not leave Jimmy like this. If Jimmy remains, he isn't certain. Gasping with pain, he gets one knee under himself and reaches up with his free hand to grasp the hilt. But his attacker's foot smashes Castiel's hand to the ground. Bones grind together, and three of them snap, one after the other. His fingers twitch in response under the polished sole. He recognizes those shoes, has studied them before under similar circumstances, and it is with dread that Castiel drags a ragged breath through his vessel's lungs and pants, "Zachariah." "Castiel," Zachariah says. His voice is laced with triumph, amusement, and most of all anger. When Castiel concentrates, he can actually see it licking around his brother's soul. "You certainly have been busy." On the surface, the tone is jovial. Underneath, the chill washes over Castiel like the final circle of hell. It speaks to how furious Zachariah is that he laid this ambush himself instead of sending another of their brethren to lie in wait at the Impala. Castiel should have been more careful, or acted with greater haste, or taken the car the first time he came. A thought occurs to Castiel through the ebbing waves of pain from his hands. "Who did you lay the trap for?" he rasped. "Dean or myself?" Zachariah's weight shifts. Another bone snaps. A muscle in Castiel's jaw jumps. "Both. Either of you. I'm glad it was you, though. You have quite a lot to answer for." Castiel grits his teeth. "I don't answer to you," he growls, face down in the dirt. It feels as if Zachariah's full weight goes into Castiel's hand. Castiel draws a sharp breath, and then Zachariah's fist is in his hair again, bending his head back at such an angle it threatens to snap Jimmy's neck. Castiel struggles to get his other knee under himself, to rise up on his elbows at least and reduce the pressure, gaze darting this way and that, as if some relief will bound up from the stalks of wheat. But when Zachariah hisses, "Look at me," Castiel flinches and instinctively meets his former superior's eyes. He was right about the fury, unmasked in Zachariah's eyes, and he sees the source as Castiel's timely rescue before Dean could be coerced to accept Michael. Castiel cannot hide his own fleeting sense of triumph. He saved Dean. Zachariah cannot force him to give up Dean's location. Not anymore. Nothing can be truly forced on a being with free will. Too often, Castiel feels weighed down with the responsibility of it, but now it gives him hope. Zachariah sees Castiel's victory. He backhands Castiel across the face without releasing his hair. "You arrogant prick," Zachariah snarls as Castiel tastes blood in his mouth. "You think you're better than us? You're no different from Lucifer." Zachariah laughs. When Castiel does not flinch again, his grip tightens. "But at least Lucifer is a proper threat. You are a nuisance, a fly to be swatted." To punctuate the point, he releases Castiel's hair and backhands him again the other way. It catches him across the ear. Castiel turns his head with the blow, wincing. "This fly has made you very angry." Castiel isn't entirely certain why this gives him a small sense of satisfaction. Even trapped and cornered here under the pre-dawn sky, somewhere inside him flickers the same pride that prompted him to taunt Raphael with words he learned from Dean. He does know this. He has made Zachariah so infuriated that he did not kill Castiel outright. This means there is some chance to survive, slim though it is. Blood from his impaled hand slowly soaks the earth. The beginnings of a plan come to Castiel. "I have to say, coming to the Impala without stopping to take a look first? That was very clumsy of you," Zachariah says, standing again, his weight rocking over Castiel's hand. The joint at the tip of his pinky finger bends and dislocates. It almost hurts more than the broken bones. Castiel's pained pant gurgles with the blood filling his mouth. He needs Zachariah to step off of his free hand, so he takes another page out of Dean Winchester's book and spits blood and saliva onto Zachariah's polished shoe. "Ugh!" Zachariah does in fact take a step back. Castiel hastily curls the damaged hand in toward his body while Zachariah recovers, and by the time Castiel has drawn the arm up against his chest, the other angel is laughing again. "Would you look at that? Spitting on my shoe. How ape-like," he sneers. "I should make you lick this clean." Castiel grimaces more from the insult than the pain. He can only heal two bones quickly. The others are too damaged to immediately repair. Then Zachariah shoves his shoe under Castiel's nose, presses against his jaw, and forces against his teeth. "Clean up your filth." Castiel turns his head, disgusted, smearing blood across his cheek. "I don't even know you," he gasps. No brother of his would suggest such a thing. Even the depravity of his re-education could be said to serve a purpose. This is merely degrading to degrade. Zachariah's foot swings up and presses down on his back. "Didn't I tell you? An angel who does not obey is dirt to be cleaned off my shoe." Zachariah's voice has gone icy cold, and his true voice whispers behind the throat of his vessel. Castiel digs his fingers into where his hand is impaled, tearing the edges, drawing fresh blood and a dizzying wave of pain. "I could say the same of you," he says. "Is there anyone in heaven who seeks God's will?" "Blasphemy," Zachariah snarls, his veneer of calm gone, and he stomps down. Six ribs break at once, a symphony of popping sounds. It is only the vessel, but Castiel is so reduced that his vision fades and his ears roar. Forcing his vessel to breathe, to live, racks him with agony. His fingers shake as he drags him through wet iron on the back of his hand. He hopes he has not ruined his work. "You," Castiel pants, "are the blasphemer." Zachariah's foot comes off of Castiel's back, and for one heart-wrenching moment, Castiel is afraid he will step back and see what Castiel is doing. But Zachariah's hand twists in the back of Jimmy's coat and shirt collar and pulls upward, choking him. "God is gone," Zachariah murmurs into Castiel's ringing ear. "He cannot hear you. And even if he could, why would he answer a sorry wreck like you?" Castiel's vessel cannot breathe. It takes all his will to drag himself up, to exceed the bonds of flesh without abandoning them. He rolls his eyes up. The work is done. He snaps his vessel's hand out, bloody and broken, and clutches Zechariah's ankle. The sigil on his impaled hand flares and burns. Zechariah startles, then seems to think for a moment that this is a gesture of supplication. Then Castiel speaks, a stream of Enochian that makes the ground quake, and his eyes go wide as Castiel bends his will upon his former superior. "Fly," Castiel commands, "to the ends of the earth, and seek your revelation." Zechariah vibrates with the desire to disobey, his soul filled with hate, but he is compelled. His wings snap out, and the grain is buffeted to the ground. Zechariah is gone. Castiel slams back into Jimmy Novak, and the agony the body is suffering knocks him flat once again. It takes precious minutes to knit his ribs back together, to heal his hand enough to take a proper grip. He sits up, shaking with exhaustion, and grabs the hilt of his blade. Drawing his sword from his hand makes him wail again. Thankfully, not a single human soul is within earshot. The wound will not be healed so easily. Castiel contemplates the gaping hole, kneeling in the wheat. He thinks of the bandages Dean would use, the needle and thread to close the gap, and bites his lip, blinking. Blood runs down his wrist, marring the sigil of command. The time between his vessel's heartbeats increases, slowly. "It is true," Castiel thinks, disgusted to agree with Zechariah, but disheartened nonetheless, that perhaps God will not listen to Castiel, or hear his pleas, or allow himself to be found by such a creature as himself. Surely by now there would have been some sign of his presence. But Castiel reminds himself to be patient. Something buzzes against his hip. Castiel looks down and remembers his phone, belatedly. He fumbles his right hand into his left pocket and looks at the display. One new text message, Dean Winchester. A button displays the message. "Where'd you go? Detour to pick up pancakes?" "I am coming," Castiel texts back. He replaces his phone in his right jacket pocket. Zechariah will be able to return soon. He spreads his wings. When he returns with the Impala, Dean is sitting on the curb. He jumps up at the sight of his car. "There you are." He turns to Castiel, his mouth open to say something, but at the sight of the angel, Dean's eyebrows rise and his gaze turns startled. "Whoa, what happened to you?" It occurs to Castiel that he has not healed the bruising in his face. It seemed like an unnecessary effort at the time. "There was some trouble," he says. He doesn't bother to elaborate. Zachariah was pushed far away and could not follow Castiel, so the danger has passed. "There isn't a whole lot that can put a bruise on you," Dean says. Castiel is distantly pleased that Dean forgets about the Impala and comes around to him, his eyes flickering across Castiel's features. "Shit, was Zach waiting for you? He get the drop on you, Cass?" Dean is also very smart. Castiel forgets this sometimes in the face of Dean's obfuscating stupidity and bouts of headstrong brashness. "Yes," he answers, and tries to evaluate the sinking feeling in his chest. "Embarrassment?" "Damn, and has he got a grudge against you," Dean grumbles. He reaches out and tilts Castiel's chin up, turning his head. Castiel allows it. Dean has done the same to Sam to evaluate damage. "That son of a bitch. Still, doesn't look like he got to fuck you up too bad." Castiel thinks of his hand, still dripping blood from his knuckles but hidden under his sleeve. Dean will know what to do with it. "Dean," Castiel says, and Dean drops his fingers from Castiel's chin, frowning. Castiel holds up his hand. Dean recoils. "Cass, what the hell?" "It was inflicted with an angelic blade. I cannot heal it so easily," Castiel says evenly. "I thought you could stitch it closed until I can repair the damage." Dean gives Castiel another surprised look. Then he reaches for the hand, more hesitant, and spreads Castiel's fingers with a gentle grip. Castiel manages not to flinch. "Dude, I can stitch it closed, but you'd better angel mojo it together fast. You twitch your fingers wrong, and anything I do is gonna tear." "That would be enough," Castiel answers. "I trust your handiwork." Dean's eyes do that strange little flicker to the side, as if he is casting the compliment to the ground. He has smudges of dark skin against the sockets, and his voice is rough with exhaustion. Castiel feels badly for asking Dean to do this now, but it would be best not to wait. "All right," Dean sighs, incredulous. He releases Castiel's hand and turns to go back inside his motel room. Castiel follows. "You didn't have to go that far, Cass. It's just a car," he says a little too loudly with regret in his voice. "An apology, then." "She is your car, Dean," Castiel says. When Dean turns to look at him, Castiel smiles with all his affection. "I wanted to get her for you." Dean rolls his eyes. "Crazy angel, let's get you fixed up."